Okay, Peggy, last question, then I'll let you go. You're on death row. Warden is turning on the juice at midnight. You can have anything you want. What are you having as your last meal?
What am I? I'm having pizza and a Caesar salad and a banana split for dessert.
Okay, nice. That's your last meal.
That's my last meal. There's nothing better than pizza and salad together. I love it.
What are you drinking?
What am I drinking? Probably a non-alcoholic beer. Probably a St. Pauli's Girl non-alcoholic beer. I really love that.
Peggy, you're about to die.
You think I'm going to go ahead and drink some real alcohol? I don't know. And I don't want to be throwing up right before I die.
It's like, you know, I'll have a Sprite. You know what? Better make it a diet Sprite. I'm on a diet.
Right? Maybe a real Coca-Cola instead of a Diet Coke.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. Thanks to all of you for your comments on the latest Dude Food, how to properly cook a steak and not turn an expensive piece of meat into an old shoe. I'm going to play a piece of an audio from a very old episode of Alton Brown's show on Food Network later that I found way after the fact, actually. And it does hit home on a lot of the points that I've learned about cooking a steak properly. Some of you are questioning why I didn't cook it on the grill. They say, oh, you're in California. Why don't you do it on the grill? Well, I didn't do it for a lot of reasons. One of the most important reasons was that, you know, you guys are always using bad weather as an excuse not to grill. You can do it indoors. You can never use time or weather as an excuse not to do something like a steak. You don't have to own a grill to do a steak. To cook a steak, you know, you can cook a really good steak on a grill, you know. Does it give a really good flavor to a steak? Of course it does. Out of this world, actually. But you don't need it to make a good steak. And yes, salt and pepper is really all that you need. Rubs are great. You can use those. Just don't get the steak wet or you're going to end up steaming it. The idea is to get a good sear on the steak so the juices stay in. I'm not going to get into this now. I'll play the clip later. And we'll catch up on that. I was going down the list of show ideas that I've been compiling since I started doing this show. And look, I know there are a lot of items that I haven't covered yet. They're like Mexican food. We haven't got into that. Indian cuisine, curries, masala, tons of things there. Haven't even scratched the surface or even hit on Southern food that much. Or soul food, chitlins, black-eyed peas, barbecue, the heart of American cooking. We haven't touched on anything that I said we'd do in the first year. Eating bizarre stuff like bull testicles, chicken ass, pork uterus. I've eaten bugs, head cheese, blood sausage, chicken feet, innards. All of that. We'll get to all of that eventually. But today, I want to talk about dinner theater. Because no one talks about dinner theater anymore. It's a dying art. I see dinner theater, and what's the first thing that pops up in your mind? Excalibur or medieval times. That would be like me saying, today we're going to do a show, we're going to devote the whole show to pizza. And everybody says, hey, great, Chuck E. Cheese. Yeah, that's what we're going to talk about. Anyway, back in January, as the after party at the Tasty Awards in Hollywood was winding down, I met Peggy Sweeney McDonald and Vinny Villicano, who co-host Meanwhile back at Cafe Du Monde. It's a food monologue show that currently tours throughout the U.S. It features celebrities and other food personalities sharing their favorite food stories in a dinner environment in restaurants around the country. I've invited Peggy to call into the show. She's going to call in a few minutes just to talk about the event. Why Meanwhile back at Cafe Du Monde? Well, sometimes people don't fully understand the impact that meals can have. You know, sometimes people sit down to have a meal, and they do so, as Don says, because they're eating to make a turd. they really, there's no real importance of that meal. They're just eating because they need to eat. Some people eat because they know it means a little bit more. Sometimes, listen, sometimes we're eating for sustenance. It doesn't always have to have meaning. But dinner, a lot of times, it has something. There's more than that. Eating a meal with loved ones and always, you know, it's always been the one thing that has connected all foodies. We understand that food doesn't just nourish your body, it nourishes your soul. And when we truly connect with each other over a meal, it helps us connect with food. And there's something special there that I think most of us can really appreciate. To get a better understanding of what Meanwhile Back at Café Du Monde is, here's a little clip from their website.
And I introduced myself, and I said, I have a working title for a show called Meanwhile Back at Café Du Monde. It's a food monologue show, and I want permission to use your name, because Meanwhile Back at Starbucks just doesn't cut it.
Sweeping the country with already over 21 shows in 6 months with 125 unique tasty food stories.
Oh, God. I've said, Mr. Obama, you don't put hot stuff in my gumbo. So that was my first falling out with the president.
My first experience as a New Orleans Saint, the first trip to New Orleans, was walking into the Saints locker room and seeing our then backup quarterback, backup to Archie Manning, Bobby Scott, sitting in his locker, in his jockstrap, a towel on his shoulder, eating a poor boy and smoking a cigarette. It was at that moment that I knew things were very different in New Orleans than back home.
Hi, I'm Peggy Sweeney.
And I'm Chef Vinny Villicano, and we're bringing our live show to every city and town across America. Each week, we're going to bring to you a new live show
with tasty food stories.
And then we're going to live
and taste those stories for you.
Meanwhile, back at Café Du Monde is a unique festive monologue event about food and how our lives revolve around it. Peggy Sweeney McDonald is the creator, producer, and co-host of this event, and she's joining us today. Peggy, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here, Phil.
Peggy, how does this event work exactly?
Well, what we do is we invite chefs, restaurant owners, local personalities, actors, writers. We've had politicians. Basically, we invite people to tell a 5 to 7 minute food story. We usually do it at a restaurant or a fun venue where people can eat and drink for the first hour and mingle. And then we have 8 to 10 headliners, as we call them, share a life story around food. These are stories that can be any kind of story that is about a life story with kind of a thread of food. So it can be a story about love. It can be a story about growing up. It can be a story about becoming a chef. It can be a story about being a coffee barista. Whatever your story is that involves food. And everyone has a food story.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they do. Where did the whole term, Meanwhile Back at Café Du Monde, actually originate?
Meanwhile Back at Café Du Monde is my title monologue, which opens the show. And that title came from when I grew up in Baton Rouge, and I had moved to New York, and I met my New Yorker fiance, and we moved back to New Orleans in 1992. And we lived in New Orleans for 5 years before moving to Los Angeles. And every time we were in the French Quarter, we would always end up at Café Du Monde. Café Du Monde is the famous place in the French Quarter that has the fried donuts, the beignets, as they call them, with the powdered sugar and the amazing Café au lait. We would always end up there if it was in the morning, in the afternoon, late at night. If people came in from town, we'd always go there. It was kind of like our place. Everyone has a Café Du Monde. It's kind of a metaphor for that place that you always go to. But when we were there, when we lived in New Orleans and we'd always go there, I would always pick up my mug and I would say, Meanwhile, back at Café Du Monde, ... and we would laugh. And I actually had said, you know, that's really a great name. One day that's going to be the name of a book or a film or a TV show or the story of my life, and we laughed about it. So when I came up with this idea to do this food monologue show, I was like, what can I name it? And then I remembered, oh my gosh, Meanwhile, back at Café Du Monde, ... And my husband said, well, that's like a metaphor because everyone has their our own Cafe Dumont. It's that place where you know it's open, you know what you're ordering, you know you can afford it, you know how it tastes, and you know you're with good friends and family. And for at least 45 minutes to an hour, life is really wonderful because, as I say, you're taking life one beignet at a time.
One beignet at a time. That is so great. I love that.
And if you've ever had beignets, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But everyone has that place that is either in their hometown. When they go back to their hometown, they have to go eat at this one place that is their place. Or it's a place that you've discovered in a city, say like San Francisco. When my husband and I go to San Francisco, we always go to Mama's Place. It's this little place that has the most amazing breakfast right there in North Beach on Washington Square. That would be our Café du Monde for San Francisco.
You know, I thought about this because I don't think I have a Café du Monde, really. I mean, there's never been a restaurant that's given me the warm fuzzies and made me feel so much at home that I miss it when I'm not there. I mean, there are places that I like to eat at, like Ad Hoc in Yountville or even Ludo Bites, which is weird because it's not really a restaurant. It's more of a pop-up. But see, for me, my experiences have always been around home. Or someone else's home, or a group of people who I always have a good experience having that meal with. You know, I feel most comfortable either in my house or eating at a friend's place. But you know, then, like, meanwhile, back at my friend Don's house doesn't exactly have the right ring to it.
Well, why not? Why not? Because, you know, when you go to Don's house, you know what you're getting, and you know you're going to have an amazing experience because the food's not just feeding you your body. It's feeding your soul because you're coming together around food and with people that you love. And that good, warm, and fuzzy feeling is going to be there. And that's what you're craving, maybe even more than the food. You're craving that warm and fuzzy feeling of all coming together and being around the table and sharing what's going on in your life, either the highs or the lows. But it's a safe place.
See, Peggy, but you just hit the nail on the head there that, and I talk about this a lot on my show, that eating a meal with your family is a lot more than just feeding your stomach. It's about feeding your soul. It's about sharing your day or about sharing your life with your family or those that you love. And I think that that is the essence of why we love food so much. It's because it's more of a social tool. It's more than just, you know, having a meal. It's that the meal becomes a vehicle for you to communicate and talk to your family.
Absolutely. And, you know, this idea for the show, I mean, it kind of just, I feel like it's been spirit-driven because it's just like the ideas came to me and then everyone to make it happen came to me. I'm a meeting and event planner. My company is Superstore Events LA. And basically, in fall of 2009, my work had pretty much dried up with this economy. And I was back in Louisiana for Thanksgiving, and I had a friend who was my Los Angeles friend who was working on a movie up in Shreveport, and I had invited her to come down for Thanksgiving but to celebrate with my family, but she was invited to the orphan Thanksgiving with all the people from Los Angeles who were in Shreveport working on the movie. So she came down the day after Thanksgiving, and I said, "How was your Thanksgiving?" And she rolled her eyes, and she told me that her story, which her story is now the coconut, a coconut pie and a bottle of wine. The night before Thanksgiving, well, that afternoon, they got off work at 2 o'clock, but they weren't invited to the Thanksgiving dinner till the next day at 5 o'clock. So she had over 24 hours alone in a corporate apartment with her two cats. So she was a little freaked out about being alone and not having anything to do. So she said she'd cook herself for dinner. She went to the grocery store. Then she went to Strawn's, which is the famous pie place in Shreveport, to get a pie to bring the next day. And she went back to her corporate apartment, cooked herself dinner, and opened up a bottle of wine, finished off the bottle of wine. By 6:30, she was in her pajamas on her couch, very depressed and lonely and craving something sweet. And the pie started calling her name. So the next thing you know, she went in and she was just going to take a little teeny bite of this coconut cream pie she had bought and then move the whipped cream kind of on top of the little piece of pie that she was going to take. And she ended up eating the entire pie. And when she told me her story, I was like, tell my mom, tell my cousin, tell my niece. And every time she told it, they were laughing so hard. I said, you know, this is like one of those monologue shows, but a food monologue show. And I thought, you know, everyone has a food, a life story around food. Everyone loves to talk about food. And in Louisiana, especially, usually when you're having dinner, you're talking about where you're going to have dinner the next day.
Yeah,
or if you're
right,
having lunch
exactly.
with somebody, you're talking about where you're going to have dinner that night. So I actually put together a outline and decided that I was going to create my own event and that I would start it in Louisiana in Baton Rouge, which is my hometown. And then I just thought I was going to do, you know, one or two, and it ended up being, you know, people loved it, and everyone on my wish list in Baton Rouge signed up to be a part of it, and then I ended up doing one in New Orleans and then in Shreveport, and then they became monthly events. And in 6 months, from May to November of 2010, we did 21 shows with over 125 food stories. And it just kind of exploded, and now we're doing it in California. We did House of Blues, Sunset, back in August, and we just did Santa Monica. And we're getting ready to do San Francisco at the Raz Room on March 8th, which is Mardi Gras Day, which is kind of cool. So that will be the San Francisco premiere. We'll be at the Raz Room March 8th. And we're very excited because we have some really fabulous headliners on board for San Francisco.
Nice. Now, the show that you did recently in Santa Monica featured Chef Nathan Lyon, right?
Actually, Nathan was not able to be there. He had his deadline for his cookbook was pushed. So he was under the gun and was not able to be there. But we had Susan Irby, the bikini chef, on board. We had Lynn Curtin, who's one of the Real Housewives of Orange County, fabulous. We had Chef William Annesley, who has his own show, History on Tap, on the History Channel, all about beer and the breweries all around the world. He was on board. We had Savannah Wise, who's a little Broadway star of Ragtime and Rock of Ages. She's actually in town for pilot season, so she was on board. And then, of course, we had Lisa, who was the inspiration for the show with her coconut pie story. And I opened the show, and then we had a couple of other people, including Party Charlie Scola, who's the event planner to the stars. He had some really funny stories about food at events. So really, it's a festive event. People love it, and it changes every time, because every time we do it, we invite new people to be on board. And we're getting ready to do Musso and Frank's in Hollywood coming up March 20th, which is going to be, we're going to try to get some old Hollywood types on board. We have Mark Wanamaker, who is the Hollywood historian, who's going to be on board talking about some dinners and some experiences at Musso and Frank's, which is such the Hollywood institution. Been there over 80 years. So it's going to be a really festive event, too. So the event always changes. I'm looking forward to doing it in different cities across the country. We're definitely looking to do one in Orange County, in San Diego, in Palm Springs, Napa, Carmel. Right now, we're really concentrating on the California cities.
Okay, so when you approach a restaurant with the idea of hosting your show, do the people who are sitting down to have the meal, do they know that this is going to take place beforehand, or are you just kind of springing on them?
Oh, no, they know. We schedule the event. We work with restaurants. They create the menu and the pricing according to whatever the menu would be for the dinner. And then what they do is we usually have somebody from the restaurant, either their chef or the restaurant owner, or even sometimes like a waiter at Musso and Frank's. We're going to have Sergio Gonzalez, who's been a waiter for 38 years at Musso and Frank's. He's going to be on board as a headliner. So we work with the restaurant to get local personalities. It's not only the chef for that restaurant. We ask chefs from other restaurants. We've had TV anchors. We've had writers. We've even had a Catholic nun in the show. You know, we pull from the local personalities, that it's the local community coming together over their food stories.
So people who are there having dinner, are they ever encouraged to take the mic and share their story?
No, we usually have the set headliners. We do sometimes, you know, we introduce everybody, which is a fun way. We introduce everybody in the show. If you were a food, what would you be and why? So that's how we introduce everyone. And usually the headliners will go into the audience and ask some of the people that are guests and that are in the audience to tell us what they would be if they were a food and why. So what would you be, Phil?
I would be an egg.
An egg. Interesting. And why would you be an egg?
Because much like an egg, I'm very versatile. I mean, with an egg, you can have an egg for breakfast or dinner. You can use the shell of an egg as a cooking vessel or a serving vessel. You can use the yolk or the white for different things, emulsions, to create mayonnaise, thickeners. It's just a very versatile food. Very versatile food item. And I'm a bit of a Renaissance man. I do a little bit of everything. And I see the egg as more of a Renaissance food item.
It definitely is, and I love that. Well, do you want to know what I would be?
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
I would be a Godiva chocolate. I come in a gold box with a ribbon on top. Sometimes I'm sweet, sometimes I'm bitter, sometimes nutty, or a combination of both, but always a treat.
That is so freaking hot.
I love it. You know, it took me a while to come up with that. At first, I said I would be an enchilada, hot and spicy. But then I was like, you know what? I want to be a Godiva chocolate. I was in Bloomingdale's one day buying some chocolates for my husband. I said, this is what I would be because they're special, you know. When you see that gold box, you know you're in for a treat.
Peggy, how did you get started in all of this? Were you in theater before? Or
yes, I was. I'll admit, I was an actress since I was young, very young. I always wanted to be an actress. And when I was in college, I started doing commercials and then moved to Houston and worked that market and then to New York and did commercials and theater and industrial films and some TV film. But I struggled, you know, it was hard and I never made a full living at it. But then I was able to segue into becoming an event producer and taking all my theatrical talents and putting it into my events. And I became a corporate meeting and event producer. So I would do these big sales and marketing meetings, and I would have these amazing themes and entertainment. And the theme wasn't just on a PowerPoint slide. It was incorporated into, you know, opening videos, closing videos, videos to introduce the CEO, videos to announce the award winners, and really fun themes like Defying Gravity, Stepping Up to the Plate, Mission Possible. And then I got laid off almost 4 years ago next month. It would be 4 years ago when I lost my corporate meeting planning job and started my own company. And I was so excited, but it was at the same time that the economy was starting to go down. And, you know, really struggled with trying to do what I love to do. And so this event, when I created this event, it kind of like smashes together events and the theater, because it just kind of brings it all together, because it is a show, even though it's not a show that is a rehearsed, acted-out show. These are people's personal stories. So the audience really connects with these stories, because it's not some acted-out, overproduced, dramatic, you know, show. It is really people talking, telling their personal stories from the heart.
So this is like reality dinner theater.
It is totally. That's what my partner in that movie, Jay Bass, has called it. It's reality dinner theater.
Do you think dinner theater as a whole is a lost or dying art? Because you don't see a lot of this stuff anymore outside of Vegas.
No, you really. I think dinner theater is kind of gone. So, I mean, I hesitate to say this is dinner theater, because it's not like you're coming to see a Neil Simon play, you know. It's not like you're coming to see a three-act show. You're going to see, hear real stories by real people, and they're telling their own personal stories. And it just makes it very unique. It's very magical. And really, the way it comes together is just, it's just the gift that keeps on giving, because I've met so many incredible people through doing this show, and so many people from my past have either been in the show or come to see the shows back when I'm back in Louisiana, and then here in California. I mean, I've met so many people through, like, meeting you at the Tasty Awards and meeting chefs and being on Susan Irby, the Bikini Chef's radio show, meeting her at the Tasty Awards and then having her in my show. It's just, it's so many gifts come out of just because of the show, because of talking about the show and meeting people who are like, oh, I want to be in the show, or I know somebody who needs to be in the show, or you should do it at this restaurant because they would love to do this. It really has been a journey. I say that the beignet gets bigger and bigger and sweeter every day, because it has snowballed. We have actually a book deal on the table for a coffee table book, which would be a coffee table book with the stories and recipes and pictures. We also just shot a TV pilot, which we're shopping that around now. And the TV pilot is based on, the TV show would be based on us going to a city to do the live show. And you would see in the TV show a little of the monologues, and then it would cut to their place of business. So like in the TV pilot, we have the dairy farmer. So he's in the show, but then you go with him, we're with him out on the dairy farm.
See, I think that this is more highbrow dinner theater, because when you say dinner theater to people, and this is audacious, the first thing they think of is medieval times.
I love it. Yes, right?
So, but I think this is why this is so much better, because This is more like, it's not like before. You'd have dinner theater. It was usually surrounding like a murder mystery type of thing. Remember that murder mystery theater?
Yes, yes.
Well, this isn't like that at all. This is a lot more highbrow because it's not like you're watching Clue while you're having dinner. You're actually hearing people's real stories. And what this does, and the good thing that it does, is that it brings more of a connection to the food that people are eating. So now they're going to remember having this meal, and they're going to start to think about the meals that they've had that have been positive memories for them. Or maybe they're going to start thinking more consciously about their food and eating and take it, you know, a different direction. So they're no longer just eating a meal. And then pretty soon they'll start asking themselves, what is my Café du Monde?
Absolutely. What is their Café du Monde and what it means to them? And, you know, the stories, I mean, some are funny. I've had some people cry at some because some people have talked about their grandmothers and, you know, how their grandmothers taught them how to cook. And people, everybody in the audience who's lost their grandmother or lost their mother, you know, had tears in their eyes and really connected to that story. But it's funny because we don't have, like, for the San Francisco, headliners, we have three chefs. And then we have an actress, and then we have a comedian, and then we have Zuzi Martin Lynch, who has Cooking for the Clueless. I don't know if you're aware of her show, but her show is all about, she invites chefs to come on her internet show and teach how to cook as if you didn't know the first thing about, you know, what does this mean to make a sauce, to make a roux. You may not even know how to make a roux. They, like, start from the beginning, like, as if you didn't have any clue how to do anything. And so, you know, we have Chef Andrea Francello. He is from the Stinky Rose. And, you know, he's from Italy. He has amazing restaurants in San Francisco. Also has a Stinking Rose here in Los Angeles. Somebody who has been around cooking forever. So then you have Holly Nugent, who is an actress and was Mrs. California 2010, who has her own food stories. So it really is a nice blend. It's not like you're going to hear all from chefs and restaurant owners. You're going to have a good mixture of people.
Well, I'd have to really think about this because there have been a lot of memorable moments that had to do with food for me. But growing up, most of the stories that I have to share involve someone being humiliated around the dinner table because that's just how my family rolls. You know?
I can relate because that's how my husband's family is. Somebody gets humiliated.
Oh, yeah? Is your husband Italian?
He's a New Yorker. He's Irish.
Well, I come from a pack of backstabbers who relish in other people's emotional pain, so I'd really have to dig deep to find some pleasant stories to share with complete strangers.
Well, and your story, I mean, how you even started your food blog and how you started your podcast. I mean, that to me is pretty, I would want to know how that all began.
You see, that's good. That would be something I could talk about.
Absolutely.
So next for Café du Monde is the San Francisco show, and that's going to be what day? March 8th, you said?
That's Tuesday, March 8th, and it's going to be at the Raz Room at Hotel Nico, which is a cabaret theater, and we have just amazing people. We have Michael Capozzola, as I said, Chef Andrea, Chef Paul Kassam, who has Pasta Paradiso, Zuzi Martin Lynch, Holly Nugent, and Russell Rumor, and then myself. And then our MC is Beth Schnitzer, and she is the marketing person at Pier 39. She's pretty amazing. So it's going to be a really fun show, and I'm going to try to bring some Mardi Gras beads to hand out to everybody since it's Mardi Gras that day.
Awesome. Now, this is obviously something that is countrywide, right? It's not just limited to California.
No, my partner Jay Bass is back in Louisiana. Right now he's planning Natchez in Jackson, Mississippi, as well as Mobile, Alabama. We're working on Memphis, Tennessee, Biloxi, Mississippi, Ocean Springs. Also more Louisiana, Baton Rouge, Shreveport, New Orleans. We're looking at Texas. We're looking, someone is trying to help us get it to New York City and Washington, D.C., and of course we would love to get it to Chicago as well, and Vegas.
Okay, Peggy, last question, then I'll let you go. You're on death row. Warden is turning on the juice at midnight. You can have anything you want. What are you having as your last meal?
I'm having pizza and a Caesar salad and a banana split for dessert.
Okay, nice. That's your last meal.
That's my last meal. There's nothing better than pizza and salad together. I love it.
What are you drinking?
What am I drinking? Probably a non-alcoholic beer, because I don't drink any longer. But I'd like probably a St. Pauli's Grill non-alcoholic beer. I really love that.
Peggy, you're about to die.
You think I'm going to go ahead and drink some real alcohol? I don't know. And I don't want to be throwing up right before I die.
It's like, you know, I'll have a Sprite. You know what? Better make it a diet Sprite. I'm on a diet.
Right? Maybe a real Coca-Cola instead of a Diet Coke.
Okay, so it's meanwhile back at CafeDumont.com. Can my listeners subscribe to a mailing list to keep up with coming events or something?
Yes, they can go on. It's www.meanwhilebackatcafedumont.com, and that's DUMONDE.com. We have a great new website, so check it out. We have a live stream account, and we have some of the chef's videos and stuff right on our landing page. And my email is on the website, Peggy@meanwhilebackatcafedumont.com. If they email me, I will definitely keep them on my mailing list. And we, you know, if you need, if you're thinking about coming to the San Francisco show, just go on to therazroom.com. That's RRAZZroom.com, therazroom.com, and you can order tickets right there. Also, Musso and Franks, they're going to start taking reservations on Monday, and that show is going to be Sunday, March 20th. And if you've never had dinner at Musso and Franks, you're in for a treat. It is quite spectacular.
I'll put a link to everything on my website, mylifeisafoodie.com. I wanted to say, when I met you and your partner Jay at the Tasty Awards.
Vinny's my host on the TV show. Jay was in Louisiana, so it was Vinny that was with me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Vinny the chef.
Yeah, Chef Vinny Villicano.
Peggy, I was drunk. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Yeah, Vinny's pretty spectacular. He's an amazing co-host of the TV show. He helped me produce it. We met. He said, not only do I want to produce this TV pilot for you, I want to co-host it. We have great chemistry. We have so much fun together. He totally made that TV pilot happen.
Well, anyway, when I met you, I got a sense about you two that reminded me of the golden age of stage entertainment. And to see that dinner theater is making a resurgence and you're bringing it back in the way that you are, I think it's great. I thought you guys were really funny, and it's great to see dinner theater continue to grow in this avenue. And it's been a real pleasure. Thanks for being here today, Peggy.
Thank you so much for having me on board. It was delightful.
Since we're going to be finishing our steak in a 500-degree oven, there's no reason not to chuck this guy in and give him a head start. It's cast iron. It doesn't care. Here at Good Eats, we don't like a lot of fancy flavors messing with our beef. Just a little ground pepper and a little kosher salt. And don't worry, the salt on the meat is not going to pull out all the juices ahead of time. Besides, it's going to go straight into a hot pan. We have plucked our pan from the 500-degree oven, but it's still not hot enough. So I'm going to put it over high heat and leave it there for at least another 5 minutes. Now, this thing's a branding iron at this point, okay? So please, handle it with a folded towel or a pot holder or something, or else you're going to end up in the burn ward. Now, to the steak. A little seasoning. We're going to use a good bit of kosher salt. Believe me, this isn't too much. Let it have some on both sides. You really want it on there. A couple of turns of black pepper. And now, we want to lube up the meat a little bit with some oil. This is going to help the heat get into the nooks and crannies and give us that brown crust we're after. It only takes a few drops, then just kind of toss it around on the plate a bit, just to give the meat a nice glisten. There. Now, into the pan. Now, here's the point where you're going to have to trust me. Do not touch this for 30 seconds. It's been 30 seconds, so I'm going to go ahead and flip this over. Now, see that brown crust? That's what we're after. So we're going to leave it for another 30 seconds. A lot of complex physics and chemistry stuff goes on during searing, but hey, I want to eat, not write a dissertation. So here it is in simple terms. You need a really hot pan, a little bit of fat on the meat, and the patience to leave it alone to develop that nice brown crust. Now, it's been another 30 seconds, and we've got a really great crust on both sides. But the inside of the meat is still not done, so I'm going to move the whole thing into the oven, right in the 500-degree oven. Now, I'm going to leave that in there for 2 minutes, and then I'm going to flip it and let it finish another two. Now, why bother, you ask? Why not just do the whole thing on the burner? Well, if I did, by the time the meat was done on the inside, that nice brown crust we've got working for us would be pretty much a black shell. By doing it this way, we let the relatively lower heat inside the oven move into the meat and finish it gently. So, 4 minutes is up, and our steak is done. That looks really great. So when you know you've got the temperature where you want it, take a minute and look at the steak. Feel it. Now see, there's some resilience there, but it's still really soft. That's medium rare. A steak or any piece of meat is kind of like this kettle. And when you're cooking it, you've got heat pushing on the tissues, forcing juice into the steak. Now, if you were to poke into it or cut it, at this point, the heat would just push the juices out onto the plate. You'd be left with, well, a nasty little dry piece of meat floating on a pool of juice, which isn't so nice. By resting the meat, well, it's like turning the heat off of this kettle, although not as fast. You take it away from the heat, you give the pressure of heat time to recede, and the juices redistribute through the meat. What could have been a piece of leather is now a juicy steak. Now, that steak's supposed to rest, not freeze to death, so I like to take just a little bit of aluminum foil and lightly cover it. Now, be patient. Leave it alone for 3 minutes, and I promise you will be rewarded.
Okay, so while Alton did his differently, and he didn't have to put that beautiful steak in the oven, that thing, it was light tan at best after he seared it. It could have gone 3 minutes aside easily, maybe longer. You do get the idea, all right? You can get this done on a cast iron skillet. The idea is to get a solid sear so the juices of the steak stay in the steak and not in the pan. And keep the damn thing dry, you know, so you're not steaming it. That's why I stressed not to use wet marinades. They're the devil. And here's the other thing. If you're like using A1 sauce or barbecue sauce or anything to enhance the flavor of the meat after you've cooked it, either A, you don't like the taste of beef, or B, you're buying some bad beef. If you have a really good steak, it's coming from a very good cow, something that has been eating well and living well before it was killed. All right, so meanwhile, back at CafeDumond.com, that's Dumond with an E, D-U-M-O-D, whoops, D-U-M-O-N-D-E, I can spell. Their show is in San Francisco on Fat Tuesday, March 8th. If you're in the area, check it out, get reservations, and keep your eyes on an Orange County event coming this year. I very well may take part in that, maybe. Just all depends on stuff. I've got a lot going on in my life. Although I'll do my best not to repeat any of my family history if I do it. Like the time my older sister teased my other sister until she started crying at the dinner table, or made me eat special dirt pies that she made in her Easy Bake oven. Or the time we had a special dinner for my aunt's 60th birthday, and this is true, she went to blow out the candles on her birthday cake, and her dentures flew out of her mouth and landed on the cake. File that under Things I Won't Be Sharing at Café Dumont. Don't forget to follow the show on Facebook and follow me on Twitter because I need the attention. Links to all of this can be found on my website, mylifeasafoodie.com. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, my name is Phil, and once again, this has been My Life as a Foodie. Salute. Like that, the challenge.